My name is Rachel White, and people call me the skeptical shaman. They say it like it's a contradiction, but it's not. For more than a decade, I've been researching and building tools for the spiritually homeless. You know, the curious but critical thinking people that, like me, have had a tough time navigating a landscape of gurus and grifters and crystal hippie people. Searching for a way to fill what Neil Gaiman called that God-shaped hole. All while, of course, not getting taken. As the host of the Skeptical Shaman podcast, I want to help us all develop a map of this confusing terrain. I'm going to talk to everybody, the curious, the skeptical, the cynical, and yes, even the true believers. Together, we can safely explore the world of woo and get closer to some meaningful existential truths. This is the Skeptical Shaman. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you feeling stuck, frustrated, or disconnected in the humdrum of everyday life, wondering where all the magic went? Is there an ancient Sumerian demon whispering Zul from inside your refrigerator, leaving you with a palpable sense of looming dread every night? Are eldritch terrors acting up and gazing back at you from the void? Well, the Totem Tarot deck might be right for you. One shuffle of these magical cards can transport you to a realm of unending adventure, providing crucial breadcrumbs as you navigate the strange and inevitable spiritual scavenger hunt of life. Purchase the Totem Tarot pack from Etsy or Amazon, then just unwrap, shuffle, and watch as the high strangeness grows from within your daily life. The Totem Tarot deck, what's your totem? Disclaimer. The Totem Tarot deck is connected to an ancient source of otherworldly metaphysical power. If you use the Totem Tarot deck, you understand that you may experience dimensional drift. Use responsibly.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Skeptical Shaman podcast. I am your host, Rachel White, and this is another one of those goddamn solo episodes about the business of woo. So if you're not curious about the business of woo or business in general or any of these things, skip ahead. We'll be interviewing, you know, levitating exorcists and water diviners and fairy queens soon enough. Well, that'll come back. Don't you worry. But for today's episode, really wanted to dig into another area where I think there's a lot of myths and also, you know, on the other side of those myths, truths. And that's in the area of thought capital, social media marketing, podcasting, and essentially what I think is generally called content creation. And by the way, if when you introduce yourself to me, you do so as a content creator, I'm about to bounce because that's not a thing. I know it's a thing, but it's not really a thing, if you catch my drift. So in this episode, just digging into some of the mistakes I see being made or myths being perpetrated, and hopefully we'll have a little bit of fun and find some humor in the bleakness of it all throughout. And these are all topics, you know, content creation is a big category, but all the subcategories within it is something that comes up a lot in my coaching work. And also, by the way, in my more corporate professional freelance work, I still do freelance writing and consulting. And I've written, I don't even want to count it, how many thought capital, thought leadership pieces, you know, in my career, but it's a lot. I've ghostwritten for CEOs, for instance, that attend World Economic Forum. I'll write in real time based on some of their notes or write things ahead of time for that. I've written innumerable ebooks and white papers in my corporate career, both in-house and as a freelancer. And I do a lot of this with Totem now, mainly because I love writing and I love podcasting and I like the dialogue that I get to have in these areas. That's a good in and of itself. But where I see it going wrong, I'll tell you, there's two places. One is the hard sell. Nobody likes a hard sell. Nobody likes a misaligned hard sell, even in quote real business. Nobody likes a hard sell. No one who's professional or knows anything does anything like that anymore. No one's the door-to-door steak knife set salesman. I mean, except for, you know, in my opinion, Adam Newman, who was the CEO of WeWork. I met him and saw him give a talk, and my initial reaction is, you know, making fun of him in sort of a Glenn Ross cliched way, like, when do I get my steak knife set? Everybody knew what that meant too, and I was not impressed. And turns out might have been intuitively onto something. If you look into the WeWork story, there's podcasts, there's shows. It's kind of hilarious, if in a gallows kind of way. But I think what prompted this and me wanting to talk about it today is I always get terrible sales pitches on LinkedIn Messenger. I don't know if you guys do too, but they are just the dregs of it. And as my husband and I joke, the dry hump of the marketing or campaign or sales pitch can be found very quickly on LinkedIn. And I stole that phrase, the dry hump of marketing campaigns, from a very disturbing and awesome and very dark cartoon that was on, I think, Cartoon Network Adult Swim, something like that, called Frisky Dingo. So if you're in the market for very disturbing, hyper-violent, hyper-sexualized, and very, very hilarious cartoon, Frisky Dingo is it for you. There was one in particular the other day, and I kind of lit the guy up a little bit because I was like, whatever, I'm having my morning coffee. Let's do this. And he, invited me to connect, and I looked, and it was sort of a vague profile, but he wasn't a bot. I could tell it was real. And I was like, what the hell do I care? Sure, I'm in expansion mode. That's what one of my spirit guides advised me, expand, don't contract. So I accepted it. Inevitably, about 12 hours later, I got a hilarious pitch where it's like, women like you often want to meet their weight loss goals. And not that I'm, the fittest, and I'm certainly not on peptides and Ozempic. I don't have that body either. But, I'm 110, 150 pounds of 5'6". I've been about that weight my whole life. I have a functional medicine doctor, because I went off of birth control. I'm like, this shit's high and tight, basically. I mean, I may not be physically high and tight, but there's stuff in place here. And I don't think I look particularly overweight in my LinkedIn photo. I'm not sure what about that gave him the clue, or maybe it was just mass marketing, which is, misalignment of buyer personas and targeting the wrong people. Mistake number one. Mistake number two was like assuming I was fat and basically, being insulting about it, for lack of a better way of putting it, just being blunt. And it was off-putting. It was alienating. It was rude. And so I wrote back to him. I go, hey, this is my height, my weight. This is what I do for my health. I'm curious what about my profile gave you the impression that I can't handle this on my own, that I'm struggling with it. I'm genuinely curious. And I go, and to back up a second, his message said something, if you'd like help achieving these goals, I'm here to help. Just let me know. You have my information. And so I sort of turn the tables a bit. And I go, if you need help refining your buyer personas and coming up with a marketing or sales campaign that doesn't insult and alienate your target client base, let me know. I'm here to help. You know where to find me. He, of course, immediately disappeared, if it was even a real person. But it just got me thinking of a scene from a fantastic movie, I think is a great movie, called Boiler Room. And there's a character played by Giovanni Ribisi in it. And basically, they end up, it's very Wolf of Wall Street or, that sort of genre of they're selling penny stocks and bullshit stocks for companies that don't really exist. And it's a big Ponzi scheme scam, right? But highly intelligent, capable people get recruited into this Ponzi scheme, or as it's known in the wellness woo industry, a multi-level marketing structure. And Giovanni Ribisi's sitting in his kitchen. And someone from, I don't know what it is. It's not the New York Post, but it's some newspaper in New York, and it's not the Times. They call him to sell him a subscription, newspaper subscription. And the guy's like, hey, I'm wondering whatever. And he goes, no, not interested. And the guy said something like, okay, well, thanks, bye. And Giovanni Ribisi's character goes, I mean, is that it? Is that your sales pitch? And walks him through like how to pitch the newspaper. And it's amazing watching him construct, deconstruct, like a proper, what we would call like solution selling approach. And at the end of the call, the guy goes, oh my God, great. Like, can I put you down for a subscription? He goes, no, I already get the Times, and hangs up on him. And my husband and I were cracking up over it. It's just a great scene in movie history. And just made me think of like, so much of this is intuitive and just normal human shit. And the minute you try and get fancy or weird, or you think LinkedIn messaging is going to do a goddamn thing for your business, it's not. Who makes money off of that? LinkedIn. And if something's free, you're the product. So let's get into, you know, social media content, content creation, how all this shit works, especially, you know, in the business of Woo. I recently had a guest on the podcast on The Skeptical Shaman. Her name's Shelley Saunier. I don't think her episode's quite out as I'm recording this, but I believe it's called The Woo Woo Woman. So it should be coming out before the end of March 2024 if you want to look for it. And Shelley described like just this moment of clarity she had, because she has a podcast called, unsurprisingly, The Woo Woo Woman. And she started to feel this weird pressure of like, I got to get an episode out. I got to think of something to talk about. I got to put content out. I got to get a, you know. And then she realized, as all of us in the business of woo do, basically, like, I don't have a boss. I'm the boss. I say when and how and why I do things. And she came to sort of the conclusion that I base the Skeptical Shaman podcast around, which is, I'm not going to create a podcast episode or interview somebody or just put something out unless I have something interesting that I'm curious about and that I want to talk about. In other words, I'm going to think about what I'm going to say first before I focus on the vehicle for me saying it. And this idea of, and I've seen this myth perpetrated, these quote rules of like social media communication or podcasting. It's like, you got to put content up every day and this many times a day or this many times a week. And at these times, you got to do this and do that for the algorithm. By the way, the algorithm is constantly changing. If you let the algorithm run your life, you're going to be chasing a moving target for the rest of your known existence. I can't imagine anything more miserable. So, you know, focusing on what you're going to say first, and then looking at, why do I want to say it? You know, am I interested in it? Do I have questions about it? If I talk about it or I write about it, is it going to help me think about it? You know, a lot of what I write on Substack, and we'll talk about Substack a little bit in this episode too, is just shit I want to write about because I'm working through it mentally and cognitively. And writing really helps me think. Writing like teaches me how to think about things, how to put it in the proper bucket, you know, where the hierarchy of information is, how I feel about things, what I really would say about it if I had to articulate it in words. Writing's, you know, a great way to get your mental and energetic files organized, number one. And number two, I tend to ask more questions than I answer, or I like exploring themes that I want to dialogue with readers or listeners about. So there's always a so what to the things that I post. I never feel obligated to create just for the sake of creating. And I'll tell you, there is such a thing as like saturation. So there is such a thing as people see so much of you that they're going to not just take you for granted, but they're going to look forward to a fucking vacation from you and your mug on Instagram in particular. Like, and it's funny. I think people think doing it all the time is really good for their business, but there is such a thing as, what is it? Distance makes the heart grow fonder. I think there's another way of putting it. Like, separation, withholding the edit, not always being in someone's face is actually a really good brand move. So in that world of social media, and even some of these podcasts that, you know, there's a lot of solo episodes, and I know I'm doing it right now. Forgive me for my sins. But where they're talking like in an infomercial style, like, and did you know that this widget, this salve, this thing, my 6 days to six figures workshop, this retreat, it's what you need. It's like all NLP, sort of like, you know, the voice of the podcaster, the social media broadcaster, is a bit like a kindergarten teacher talking to kids. Like, isn't this exciting? It's like, no, it's not fucking exciting. Why are you talking to me like I have a disorder? We're like, I can understand you. Just talk to me like a person. That's always my initial reaction to it. And the other thing that struck me about it is something I recognized from corporate. It was considered really bad practice, cliche, out of vogue in corporate real estate, which something's out of vogue there and considered cliche. You should probably avoid it anywhere, especially in the business of woo. And it's this PowerPoint style of communicating. So a lot of people back in the early aughts in the 90s were taught that a PowerPoint slide, which is a presentation software, it's a bit like Keynote and a bit like certain templates for presentations like Canva, right? So when I say PowerPoint, I mean all of the above. where they said it should be 3x3, the 3x3 rule. So you should have three main bullet points across three different subcategories. And in a presentation, you should tell people what you're going to tell them, then tell people what you told them. So we got this 3x3 rule. And there's a brilliant man named Edward Tufte. I'll include his links in the show notes, by the way, who wrote a series of sort of like white paper booklet kind of things that just eviscerated this style of communication. He gave some really incredibly like just vicious examples of how and when and how intensely it goes bad. In one of them, I believe it's called the cognitive style of PowerPoint. Yeah, that's got to be it. And there's like a funny Soviet propaganda looking image on the cover of it, which I love. But his main thrust of his argument in the cognitive style of PowerPoint is that humans can consume so much more information than three bullet points on a slide and a PowerPoint at a time. And you at the front of the room reading the fucking bullet points to everybody, it's like they just read it. They don't need you to reread it to them. Like, there are first graders that have higher cognitive horsepower than this, right? And what ends up happening, actually, Tufte's argument is people disengage. They sort of disassociate because they're bored out of their goddamn minds. You're not engaging them. You're not challenging them. You're not getting their brains to really want to stick with you and go with you on this ride. And I saw that over and over again. So one of my rules when I was in corporate was we never used PowerPoint or anything like it, for that matter. At any point that we could, went off screen, and we made things highly interactive. So not just a conversation, but gamification of a big pitch meeting. I mean, we made a board game for a meeting with a big technology company. That was really fun. Our CEO was sort of like the bank in the game. We made bad bogey money for the competitors that had like, you know, these X's through it. It was a blast and the client loved it. Everybody got really excited about it. And it was a way to just have a dialogue. Usually the people that are C-suite, that are in that room, they know what to talk about. They don't need a slide with three bullet points to help them. Nobody does. So we made comic books. We'd serve people tea, do a teaser. We just had fun in meetings. And honestly, I was blown away when I sort of navigated full-time to the business of Woo and I saw people on social media doing basically like PowerPoint slide talking points of like, okay, today's three tips for manifestation OR. Or this week, we're exploring every day is a new, you know, 7 days to seven figures. And just this like incredibly regressive, infantilized way of communicating with other adults. And I think I've mentioned it before, but it rung of what Obama calls the soft bigotry of low expectations. And it's ineffective. I talked to a lot of people who spent so much time, I mean, so much time on social media. They hired, quote, experts who advised them on like, this is when you do this at this hour of the day, then you do it that hour of the day, da 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 da. And insisting that social media was required to grow business in the new age or woo space. And it just fell flat. And they ended up just spending time on something that, frankly, I think is training language models and AI. I think that's why it's free. And if something's free, you're the product. So when you're approaching any kind of content creation, but in our space, the business of woo, I would say mainly like social media, videos, reels, da da da, whatever you're going to do, you, number one, do not have to do it full stop. Like, I think you should have a social media handle, like an Instagram handle, Facebook thing, whatever, as price of admission. It's become one of those new, like, cost of doing business things, just like a website used to be before that, having a business card was. So you got to do it to look like you're a real person. Things are real. It can be useful. It can be fun. But I'm telling you, there's the myth of making money on social media. There was a window for that. Nobody's making money there anymore. Everyone I talk to, who, by the way, has a lot of followers, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of followers, says it's just this void that they put their time and their energy into. And it generates noise. And people reach out to them thinking they have a parasocial relationship or thinking they can just ask them whatever questions they want to ask them or like tell them about their dreams on Instagram. Nobody has capacity for that. And so what ends up happening is people feel wiped, burned out, like they've given to something that doesn't give back to them. And also, I just think they're going about it the wrong way. Personally, I don't consume content on social media. So I don't sit down and watch Instagram. I don't follow any social like media accounts of other spiritual practitioners unless they're my friends, frankly. And it's because they're my friend. It's nothing to do with their content. No offense, but sure, their content's great. And it's not this, you know, three bullet point bullshit. But, you know, also I do this and I live this every day. I don't want to see what other people are doing. That's not how innovation works. That's not a good use of my time. And it's just not, I find that people who are successful, driven, busy, and cognitively kind of, you know, together, gelled together, they don't spend a lot of time on Instagram unless they're shopping for shoes. So by the way, if you're a consumer product purveyor or a retailer, like you make shoes or accessories, Instagram ads and Instagram reels, that's where you should spend your time, but not the business of, as far as I'm concerned. So in Tufte's cognitive style of PowerPoint, he gives many examples of when this style of communication fails and fails epically. One of them is the Gettysburg Address. So he puts Abraham Lincoln's famous speech, the Gettysburg Address, into sort of a distilled PowerPoint format, showing how dumb it gets. I mean, he does like a mocked up PowerPoint slide. It's like country in turmoil, things hard, divided. And it's like, you take this beautiful narrative speech with all these nuances, inspirational lines, all this beautiful content, and you distill it down to just drivel. And then another example he lists, and I forgot which Apollo space mission this was, but it was the one that exploded quite famously and people, I think, died. But the reason for the error, the technical engineering error, the mechanical error, was because NASA was circulating a PowerPoint deck. And in order to get a number to fit on a slide, they truncated it, something in the, you know, the exponent portion of the decimal point. Like they cut it off and rounded it up or something. And that tiny infinitesimal decimal point change, they started using the deck as a technical document, which was not its original mission. And it led to a real problem and a real loss of life. So not that anyone's going to die because you do simplistic stuff on social media. I'm just saying there's a reason for nuance in language, and words are cool because they mean things. And instead of thinking about when and how we communicate, I really believe the first question is why and what. Like, what do I want to say? Why do I want to say it? And, you know, do people want to listen to it? Might be a distant third, you know, and we'll talk about that a little bit. The exchange between you and your audience, whether they're listening or they're reading, is important. But you should kind of just talk about things you want to talk about, explore topics you want to talk about, operate intuitively, have fun, be joyful, be in a state of play, all of that. And the minute you start feeling obligated to social media or podcasting in your own business, you've already lost the plot, honestly. To that end, when you write or you podcast, so I write on Substack. Substack is under the banner of Totem Readings. I love it. I write long form. Trust me, everybody told me no one's going to want to read these. They're long. The Substack only grows. I don't care. I think people are smart. I think they can read. I think they're going to enjoy it. I personally like reading long form versus short form. I don't like everything being like a little modular, snackable thing out of a spiritual vending machine, personally. So that's the kind of content I'm going to create. And likewise on the podcast, we have different kinds of conversations, and sometimes I make people uncomfortable. Sometimes I get hate mail. Sometimes I get the attention of Scientology, you know, shit happens, but at least it was exciting and fun and interesting. But to this end, the thing to bear in mind is the even exchange of energy. So just like in your woo business, you're going to need to charge an appropriate rate for your time, your energy, and all the years and training, everything that went into what makes you capable now. You also need to think through what you're giving your audience. And you shouldn't be hard selling all the time. It shouldn't be that, you know, dry hump of marketing and infomercial style sales. You should really think about if you're adding value. Are there tangible tips in here people want? Are you giving them information they're not getting anywhere else? Like, they're giving you their time and attention at a minimum. You know, if they subscribe or they rate or they review, that's even more. They're giving you. And sure, you're giving them content for free, but they're giving you time and attention, which are incredibly, incredibly valuable things for anyone to give anybody anymore. And they're at such a minimum. Those are more valuable than gold, right? And to that end, it shouldn't always be a hard sell. Like my Substack, I will talk about new services. On this podcast right now, on the solo episode, I'm talking about the Business of Woo, which is a new kind of mentoring program I've decided to launch because people have been demanding it of me and it's been coming up organically, right? So that is, technically speaking, full transparency. We're big on transparency here. The Skeptical Shaman podcast is a soft sell. It is. But I'm not doing it because of that. And that's the best part, is I actually think this is going to be additive for you guys. And then the one thing you never, ever want to structure is a parasitic strategy with content creation. In other words, it shouldn't be a fucking trick to get rats in a maze. Or as one very unethical, spiritual adjacent business coach said to me, I got to get people in my sales funnel. It was like, how dreadful. Like, all I could think of was like fairy tale villains in the sales funnel. It's like the witch in Hansel and Gretel. It's her fucking cottage, right? Like, I don't want to go in there. And the basic premise stands, like, you know, luring people in with candy or promises of these wonderful things. And then you end up just getting trapped in a cage and cooked for dinner for a witch. That's sort of the energy there. And that might work here and there, one-off short-term. It's not going to work long-term. It's a brand cannibalizing strategy. You're eroding your brand by doing shady shit. Don't do shady shit. And also, if you're not a woo practitioner that feels like you have something to add or say, whether it's written or it's oral, like on a podcast, then you don't have to do this. You really don't. It's not a big deal. And, you know, it's not for everybody. I really think you should be writing, podcasting, or creating content that you're passionate about and, you know, in a way that gives you energy, not the other way around. So just know there's ways around this. You don't have to be this way. You don't have to be this person. I happen to have had a long career doing this work. It was my favorite stuff to do in corporate. I always aggressively volunteered to write white papers and ebooks, and just because I like exploring concepts and I like engaging in a dialogue that isn't just, you know, nonsense, hardcore sales, you know, putting the squeeze on somebody and elbowing them into giving you money. There's something really gauche and tacky about a lot of it. So myths, just want to run through the myths before we get to the truths about this stuff with some pragmatic, maybe tips and advice. One of the myths is that you make money on social media. I could really get into that. I might write a white paper about that, but those days are over. Some people are making a little bit. You can't live off of it unless you're, you know, Kim Kardashian. She doesn't even make it on that. She just uses it as a business accelerator for consumer products. And also she got in that golden era, you know what I mean? Before everybody got oversaturated and yeah, it's done. It's almost like social media and Instagram in particular were kind of like an MLM. Either you got in at the ground floor of it or it's not going to work that well for you. And going viral or building a lot of followers, you know, a big myth is doing that is a key to a successful business. It's the only way you're going to scale your business. You need to do it. That's how you break out. It's like, no, it's not. I know people with hundreds of thousands of followers, many of whom might just be bots. I have no idea, who don't make a profit. Like, you know, they're busy, they're churning, they're doing all this stuff, but number one, they're totally utterly disconnected from the whole origin of the woo to begin with. Like, did you start out as a shaman? Why do you want to do this? And that person, that psychic, that energy worker, whatever, there's no way, if they're sincere and they're genuine in their practice, their spiritual practice, that they want to spend like 6 hours a goddamn day dealing with social media or getting glam done or getting this done or hiring a manager. It's just, there's no way that's in alignment. And what's more, going viral is a stupid goal. It just is. And there's no way to predict it. Most of the people I personally know who had a viral moment, it was something they kind of brain farted out or the timing was right. Like, it's a real just luck of the draw, flip of a bitch kind of thing. I would also say in another myth is quantity is greater than quality. Or in other words, frequency is greater than the so what. I really think waiting until you have something to talk about and you feel like talking about it is going to benefit you a lot more than showing up every day and going, hey, everybody. So I was on my nature walk and it got me thinking about nature walks. It's like, oh my God. You know, I almost want to invoice certain people when I've fallen into it and hate watch that stuff. I've been like, you owe me money. I can never get that 5 minutes of my life back, please. It's odd. Now, the other big myth is social media converts to clients and sales and business success. It doesn't. It's a price of admission metric for a lot of things. Like, by the way, if you talk to book publishers and agents, they want you to have at minimum 40,000 followers. And they'll even tell you, we don't care if those are bots. We don't care if you buy those followers. We need to see that metric so you're more of a sure bet. And all I could think when I was hearing this over and over again was, I can only imagine like Ernest Hemingway or Gertrude Stein being told they need a 40,000 followers so they were a sure bet. They tell people to go F off. And that's just, you know, it's that dry hump kind of thing that just takes all the joy and magic, I think, out of having a business, let alone a woo-based business, right? And if focusing on growing followers and all of that, I really think they choke certain people off. I think they elevate other voices. That's not like a conspiracy. That's a real thing. And I'm not saying that as an excuse for my low follower count. My low follower count is because my followers know that I feel contempt for the platform. And I'm quite open about that. Like, I'm very passive aggressive about being on there. And I don't care. I don't care about it. But also, those who do, who knows what's behind that? That could be social things. That could be somebody they're paying on the back end. You don't know how the sausage gets made. That's the part of the woo you don't see. Now, truths. So I have found tremendous success, both personally, just creatively and in terms of my own expression, with writing on Substack and with podcasting. So I started podcasting and I created the Skeptical Shaman because with what I do for a living, I have so many incredibly interesting, intimate, vulnerable, you know, ideas sparking conversations with people all the time. And part of me was like, I need to share some of this. And I do have a motive and I'm quite open about it, which is I really want to get people thinking deeper about this stuff. Like, I don't want it to be like it's Tuesday, I wear my carnelian crystal on Tuesdays. And here's like that shit is just everywhere. And it just bothers me. So part of it too is like I started, maybe the correct term is like rage podcasting. I got very motivated from that anger I was feeling about what I was seeing. And it just didn't align with me. And I didn't like that it was the dominant trend out there in the marketplace in the business of womb. And I've really enjoyed meeting new people because of the podcast, having the conversations I've had. It's a good in and of itself. It's not just a means to an end. I will tell you too, though, that people really listen. And I don't have the biggest podcast. I don't have the biggest listenership. I don't have sponsors. So I pay a couple of $100 every episode for audio editing and other things. And I thought it was going to be a loss leader. Like, I didn't think it was going to make a profit. However, people listen. And they listen to all of them. And then they go listen to me on other people's podcasts. And those people reach out to work with me. And I'm not just happy about that because it means my business is busy. I'm happy about that because that person knows who I am and what I stand for, what Totem Readings, my spiritual practice stands for, what my mission is. And they're aligned with that work. And that means all of us, it's going to be a value-added experience for every stakeholder involved at that point. And on Substack, I love writing. I just love it. And I like Substack because it's not traditional social media. You don't have a feed, if you will, like a quote feed that gets pushed to you other than what you subscribe to. So there's no algorithm trying to, you know, corral you into anything. People aren't salesy on Substack. People are really exploring long form, deep, intensive, existential, deep woo concepts on there. It's fascinating to me. There's a lot of independent journalists on there. It is Substack as a company is, you know, they are free speech absolutists. So if something's not illegal, if it's not, you know, child pornography or genuinely criminal, they don't edit it. And you don't have to read it. You're an adult. You can unsubscribe if you've realized you subscribe to something you don't want to see and you don't like. I personally like the freak show aspect of it. I subscribe to a lot of people that I disagree with. I like reading their stuff. I've discovered brilliant people on Substack that are writers that have come on my podcast and been guests on my podcast, including Matthew Gindin, who was just on the episode called Philosophy as Therapy. That's the name of his Substack. It's a really additive Substack for me. And it's stuff I don't know that much about. I don't write that much about. I love it. And I like the dialogue on Substack. You know, I just posted about the solar eclipse coming up. I think it's up to like 22, 23 comments back and forth. That's in addition to about the same amount of emails that I've gotten from people privately. It's a really fascinating dialogue that affirms me as a spiritual practitioner and shaman, because I put some really weird woo stuff out there in that post. People wrote back to me and said, I can't believe you wrote that. I had that same dream. That's exciting. That's like the spiritual scavenger hunt stuff that we love. So do things that bring you joy. I think long form writing and long form conversations via podcast, that's the way of the future. People are done with snackable, commoditized drivel. They just are. And so, you know, that's how I view content creation. And I'll tell you that you have to do this, you know, somewhat regularly. Like I said, when you have something to say, not just when it's time to kind of report to the factory and do something heartlessly, mindlessly, and without a reason. But doing it for a while, being relatively consistent, really getting your voice out there, eventually those seeds take root and they start to grow and they start to yield fruit. And one example for you, and this episode of Psychic Story isn't out yet. I don't know when it's coming out. And by the way, Nicole's not obligated to me, so it doesn't need to come out. But the point's still relevant. She had a guest on her podcast that seemed to trigger an interesting reaction from her listeners who felt motivated enough to write to her out of concerns that this individual was culty, leading a cult, full of shit, you know, whatever you want to say. So she reached out to me because she goes, hey, you're the skeptical shaman. Like, you know, knowing that her friend Rachel is relatively obsessed with the topic of coercive control and spiritual narcissism and cults and, you know, all of the things that go along with that. And I just am, because I think it's tied to the underlying theme of empowerment and discernment that kind of underwrites what I do for a living in my brand. So she reached out, sent me some stuff. I looked at the listener feedback, listened to the episode, reached out to her. I said, don't take it down, because, you know, she was contemplating that and worried about it. Because, by the way, Nicole's a very good person, cares about her brand in the marketplace. And I don't mean that superficially. I mean, truly, like as a person, she doesn't want to do irresponsible stuff or cause harm. And I convinced her or persuaded her, or maybe she thought it was a good idea to begin with, that we get on together and talk about it. And that I would leverage my quote, what the term would be, is like subject matter expertise. And I know what you're thinking, what makes you an expert? I don't know, the fact that I read and write about it constantly. And that I have a podcast called The Skeptical Shaman, where I've interviewed a lot of cult survivors and whistleblowers, like shit like that, right? So I came on, and that was a moment where me having generated about a year's worth of steady thought capital, thought leadership, podcast episodes, posts on Substack, what we used to call like blogs or white papers or ebooks, but in a new format, because woo-based businesses are different from corporate businesses. And I'm now getting invites, and I have two more, by the way, other podcasts to come on and just talk about culty dynamics, red flags, what to look out for as someone who's spiritually curious and seeking a practitioner. So I've managed to position myself in that place in the marketplace, and it's not cynical. I am that person. If you invite me to a healing circle and I see some bullshit, I'm going to call bullshit. It couldn't be more authentic and aligned with what I think is my spiritual purpose here in this world. But it also happens to be something that I've researched and I want to talk to other people about. And it's good for my brand. It's good for me. It's good for my business. It's good for my clients. I think it's good overall, by the way, for the dialogue about all this stuff and the business of woo, and just getting people to lock in a little differently and use more discernment. And to that end, before I let you go, there's a really great podcast. And I mentioned it when I just did that interview with Nicole on A Psychic Story, and it's called The Dream. And the logo of the podcast is great. It's like the all-seeing eye in the pyramid. And it's about the American dream being permeated with cons, con artists, grifts, multi-level marketing things, pyramid schemes, all of the above. And she really dives into the woo space, the life coaching space, crystals, spiritual people, you know, all that stuff. What I loved about it is she starts out pretty cynical and black-pilled, which is fine. I'm very tolerant of those people, just like I'm tolerant of true believers. I don't think I have all of the knowledge of the known universe locked inside of me, so I try and keep a little bit of intellectual humility. And she's funny, and she's got a great voice. She's a great podcast host. But as it goes on, she starts to open up, because she has her own shit going on with her health and in her life and a breakup and all this stuff. And she actually ends up hiring a life coach who's very sweet and earnest. And it's additive for her. And so at the by the end of the podcast, I think it's something like three or four seasons, there's a truly balanced picture of what I would call the business of Wu, where she sits where I sit, which is it can be really helpful. Spiritual stuff is real. There is something to the these myriad phenomena, right? And we all experience it. Everyone I know, we get a corporate CEOs, taxi drivers, whoever. Everybody has a ghost story. Everybody has a dream thing with a relative. Everybody has a thing where they touched the waters of the womb, right? So this is a human, in my opinion, a cornerstone of the human experience. But in this space, especially in an economy where things are hard, people are getting laid off. It's hard to get a, quote, real job or day job. People are going to come here grifting, thinking this is an easy place to fleece. You know, desperate, hopeful, innocent, earnest human beings, like all of the above. And by the way, I've been fleeced. Okay, so I've signed up for shaman school and didn't get that much out of it from the teacher. You know, had the teacher ask me to help her with her rent for her apartment, which was just weird, and everything felt weird and creepy. But I was able to take little things out of it. So I'm just saying that to let you know, I'm not above or beyond getting conned here and there. I'm getting better at it the older I get. I think it's one of those price of admission things when you enter this space. But, you know, I wish when I was younger, like in my early 20s getting into this, I wish I had someone helping to guide me and give me some of the red flags or bullet points to look for, giving me permission to like look at Instagram and go, oh, you know, I don't have to like this person. Or just because she says she's nice and she acts like she's nice doesn't mean she's nice. And just because they say this doesn't mean it's true. Like, so mainly the main thing I want you to take from this episode is give yourself permission to call bullshit. And you don't have to hard sell. You don't have to do any of this nonsense with these people. You know, there's no such thing as 6 days to six figures, just so we're all clear. Something ain't clean in the milk with those assertions. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And if you want to create content, you want a podcast, I think podcasting and Substack have been tremendously additive to my business, but also to my life. I've really enjoyed the exercise in and of itself. And if you need any guidance with any of these things, or you want to know who helped me with my podcast, shoot me a note, click on the links below in the show notes. I'll connect you to everybody. I'll give you all my people, all my resources. They're all, by the way, very ethical, nice, good people. It's why I work with them. And yeah, just know you don't have to engage in the dry hump. And you also don't have to respond to the dry hump. But if someone reaches out to sell to you and it's no good, just let them know. Give them a little bit of feedback. Have some fun with those terrible sales campaigns on LinkedIn. I mean, I know I did. And again, Business of Wu mentoring program, it's going to be launching in April. You want to work with me, you want to learn about how we're doing this. I'm trying to keep it really simple. Just click on links below, schedule a free consult with me. It may be a good fit. It may not. I may have capacity. I may not. Timing might be right. I may not. But effectively, I don't think this is going anywhere. And, you know, I'm eager to hear back on what you guys have to say. Thanks so much. And until next time, you know, stay watchful. Here at the Skeptical Shaman podcast, we have a few sponsors that make all of these incredible conversations and discussions possible. Please take a moment to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Are you feeling disconnected from magic? Do you find yourself staring out the window in your nondescript workplace, wishing you were among the trees in the sunlight? Are you being slowly drained by your office energy vampire? You know the one. They won't stop talking about how her cat is at the vet for the third time this month. Is the disembodied hand you purchased from a traveler acting up at night, opening drawers in your bedside table and disrupting your circadian rhythms? Well, Totem Flower Essences might be right for you. Purchase Totem Flower Essences on Etsy, and one drop of these magical potions can alchemically transmute your energy body, arming you with unmitigated powers of sorcery. Totem Flower Essences, be ungovernable. Totem Flower Essences are handmade by an emotionally unstable and morally dubious shaman, potentially injecting your life with raw chaos and magic in the attention of various pagan gods. Use responsibly.